Hello, friends, and welcome to episode 1168 of the Juice Box Podcast. Today, I'll be speaking with Amy. She's had type 1 diabetes for 41 years, diagnosed in 1982. She's developed RA and gastroparesis. Amy's even used a stomach pacemaker to regulate her digestion. It's a very interesting conversation that I think you're going to enjoy. Please don't forget that nothing you hear on the Juice Box Podcast should be considered advice, medical or otherwise. Always consult a physician before making any changes to your healthcare plan or becoming bold with insulin. If you're a U.S. resident who has type 1 diabetes or is the caregiver of someone with type 1, please take the time to fill out the survey at t1dexchange.org/juicebox. You'll be helping with type 1 diabetes research when you complete the survey at t1dexchange.org/juicebox. When you place your first order for AG1 with my link, you'll get 5 free travel packs and a free year supply of vitamin D. drinkag1.com/juicebox. Don't forget to save 40% off of your entire order at cozyearth.com. All you have to do is use the offer code juicebox at checkout. That's juicebox at checkout to save 40% at cozyearth.com. US Med is sponsoring this episode of the Juice Box Podcast, and we've been getting our diabetes supplies from US Med for years. You can as well. usmed.com/juicebox or call 888-721-1514. Use the link or the number, get your free benefits check, and get started today with US Med. Today's episode is sponsored by Medtronic Diabetes, a company that's bringing people together to redefine what it means to live with diabetes. Later in this episode, I'll be speaking with Jalen. He was diagnosed with type 1 diabetes at 14. He's 29 now. He's going to tell you a little bit about his story. And then later, at the end of this episode, you can hear my entire conversation with Jalen. To hear more stories with Medtronic champions, go to medtronicdiabetes.com/juicebox or search the hashtag Medtronic Champion on your favorite social media platform. This episode of the Juice Box Podcast is sponsored by the Eversense CGM. Eversense is going to let you break away from some of the CGM norms you may be accustomed to. No more weekly or bi-weekly hassles of sensor changes. Never again will you be able to accidentally bump your sensor off. You won't have to carry around CGM supplies. And worrying about your adhesive lasting? Well, that's a thing of the past. EversenseCGM.com/juicebox.
Hi, I'm Amy. I'm 53 years old, type 1 diabetic, had diabetes for 41 years. So got type 1 when I was 11. I'll save you the math.
Thank you.
I got it in sixth grade, back when technology didn't exist, peeing on strips and test tubes in the nurse's bathroom in elementary school. My diagnosis story is typical, so I'm not going to spend too much time on it, but peeing a lot for weeks, lost a lot of weight that I didn't have to lose, thirsty constantly, got up 5 times during a movie. My parents still talk about it, to go to the bathroom.
What movie?
Chariots of Fire.
Chariots of Fire. Thank you.
Yep. Still don't like the movie to this day. Mm-hmm. Kind of traumatized by it. Then I got what we thought was the stomach bug, but was DKA. Mm. Started throwing up, and my mom took me to the pediatrician, and they said she has diabetes. Never heard of diabetes before, or barely. And they said you need to get to Children's Hospital right now.
Wow.
Take her. In Boston.
41 years ago.
Yeah, 1982.
Jesus.
Yeah. So when I got to the hospital, my blood sugar was 800. I don't know what my A1C was. Don't remember ever hearing about an A1C at all.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure what was going on back then, but I was in the ICU for 3 days and then in the hospital for 10 overall and training. Giving an injection in an orange. That's how I learned. My dad learned too, but no one's ever given me
injection. Never really got close to you with it. I'm just sitting here thinking, if you took an 18-year-old person right now and said, hey, something happened to Kim in 19 or Amy in 1982, I think they'd go, when? Don't you think that would seem, Amy, like 100 years ago to them?
Yes.
Yeah.
It does. Especially with where we are now with diabetes and technology and like people I work with that weren't born when I got diabetes. Yeah.
There's a lot there. So, okay.
There is. Okay.
Let me ask a couple of questions. Do your parents still like Chariots of Fire? Or do they not like it either?
My dad likes it. He's the one that took me. He likes it.
He's
never
like,
saw it again.
He's a boy. Me. He's like, I'm not associating this with anything.
He's like, I don't care. That's your disease.
A fun movie that I liked. Arden.
Yeah.
When Arden was diagnosed, there were like, this is going to sound ridiculous to people, but there were DVD players, portable DVD players were a big deal.
Oh, yeah.
Right? People are like, a what? Like, so you could, it was like a Walkman, but for a movie. I don't know how to explain.
Oh, I remember.
Yeah, yeah. Kelly had like, we brought like a handful of DVDs with us to the hospital and with this DVD player in it. But Arden watched the same movie over and over and over again.
Oh,
and
boy.
Kelly hates the movie now. Like she associates it with Arden getting diabetes.
Oh, yeah.
But Arden really likes it. So.
Oh, I will never see Chariots of Fire again. But
So let me ask a couple of questions.
Yeah.
Is there any diabetes in your family besides you? Type 1 down the lines.
So a second cousin and their child had type 1.
Is this before you or after you?
One is the mother of my second cousin once removed before me. The other child after me. She was 1.5.
Okay. She was diagnosed later.
Yeah.
What is... You know, just kind of briefly, because I feel like we know at this point, but what's diabetes 41 years ago? Like, what's your day-to-day grind?
It's exchanges, not carb counting. Mm-hmm. It's, hey, you can have this many breads, this many proteins, this many vegetables, whatever. You can't eat sweets. You can have a dish of ice cream once a month, basically. Mm-hmm. You can't have juice. It was a lot of restriction and NPH and regular pork insulin, and was allergic eventually to that. Got hives for a long time, had to switch to beef, and then luckily Humalog. But it was a lot of injections, but no rhyme or reason, basically. Like you eat at this time, you give an injection, 3 injections a day, 3 meals a day, some snacks.
Mm. It's funny to hear you talk about insulin like it's bouillon. Do you need the chicken or the beef?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It was like, you're allergic to the pork. Okay, here's the beef. And nope, that's not going to work. I didn't have a problem with food or weight or anything. But when somebody tells you, you can't eat anything but this at this time, I quickly got a problem with food and snuck it. So hi, mom and dad. Hope you're going to listen to this. This is great. Bought lots of junk in, snuck it in my room through my teen years. Trips to McDonald's, etc., that bad eating continued in the sneaky way all through college until I got my first complication. So,
well, okay. So did it cause a lifelong problem with food?
Yes.
Tell me how.
So I wasn't overweight at all until I think a couple of years after diagnosis, so 14, stopped doing sports teams and kept eating and just was on a million different diets, Weight Watchers, etc. I don't have to list them. They're all like the go-tos and was like obsessed with, not in a, like my eating patterns weren't great because I snuck food, but not in a like eating disorder way. Although the eating itself was probably disordered, but no clinical whatever. I just snuck food and ate it. Always gave medicine. Never skipped my insulin, but didn't always 100% accurately write down
what
the urine tests. Or, well, I never wrote that down.
No.
But didn't write down what my urine strip said all the time. Or eventually finger sticks. When we started testing with finger sticks, I fudged the numbers when I had to go to my endocrinologist. Mm-hmm. And show them the logbook, which looked like a checkbook, and you had to write all these numbers, which I would do the night before. So,
do you think the thing with the food was about food, or do you think it was about control? Today's podcast is sponsored by the Eversense CGM. Boasting a 6-month sensor, the Eversense CGM offers you these key advantages. distinct on-body vibe alerts when high or low, a consistent and exceptional accuracy over a six-month period, and you only need two sensors per year. No longer will you have to carry your CGM supplies with you. You won't have to be concerned about your adhesive not lasting, accidentally knocking off a sensor, or wasting a sensor when you have to replace your transmitter. That's right, there's no more weekly or bi-weekly hassles of sensor changes, not with the Eversense CGM. It's implantable, and it's accurate. Eversensecgm.com/juicebox. The Eversense CGM is the first and only long-term CGM. Eversense sits comfortably right under the skin in your upper arm, and it lasts way longer than any other CGM sensor. Never again will you have to worry about your sensor falling off before the end of its life. So if you want an incredibly accurate CGM that can't get knocked off and won't fall off, you're looking for the Eversense CGM. Eversensecgm.com/juicebox. This episode is sponsored by Medtronic Diabetes. MedtronicDiabetes.com/juicebox. And now we're going to hear from Medtronic champion Jalen.
I was going straight into high school, so it was a summer heading into high school.
Was that particularly difficult?
Unimaginable. You know, I missed my entire summer, so I was going to a brand new school. I was around a bunch of new people that I had not been going to school with, so it was hard trying to balance that while also explaining to people what type 1 diabetes was. My hometown did not have an endocrinologist, so I was traveling over an hour to the nearest endocrinologist for children. So, you know, outside of that, I didn't have any type of support in my hometown.
Did you try to explain to people, or did you find it easier just to stay private?
I honestly just held back. I didn't really like talking about it. It felt like it was just a repeating record where I was saying things and people weren't understanding it. And I also was still in the process of learning it. So I just kept it to myself, didn't really talk about it.
Did you eventually find people in real life that you could confide in?
I never really got the experience until after getting to college. And then once I graduated college, it's all I see. You know, you can easily search Medtronic champions. You see people that pop up and you're like, wow, look at all this content. And I think that's something that motivates me, started embracing more, you know, how I live with type 1 diabetes.
To hear Jalen's entire conversation, stay till the very end. MedtronicDiabetes.com/juicebox to hear more stories from the Medtronic champion community.
Well, I wasn't allowed to eat anything.
Yeah. So are you like being like, I'll show you, like subconsciously, I'll eat whatever I want? Or was there a real loss of the foods that you enjoyed?
There was a loss of the food. Well, my mom and dad never had junk food in the house, really. So it wasn't a problem until it was, right? So I guess it was like, I'm not allowed to eat this. My mom's against me eating this too. She doesn't make sweets, etc. So I'm going to eat it in my free time.
Okay. In my free time, which when you're a kid is plentiful.
Exactly. Wish I had that free time now.
I know.
but yeah, so went to college 4-ish years. So let's say 4.5. Had an extra semester in there. Didn't tell anybody I had type 1 for the whole time. Mm-hmm. Never told anyone. The first person I told was my first husband. My ex-husband is the first person I ever told after we had been dating, but I kept it a secret, didn't tell my roommate. I have to say, I don't remember testing. And this is like shameful for 4.5 years. Wow. I didn't feel low. I didn't feel high. I was just eating, drinking some, not like a huge problem, but middle of the night pizzas, lots of subs. Yeah.
Yeah. Is that not testing thing? I mean, what was the testing technology like at that point? Was that still?
I can't remember if it was finger stick or the urine strips.
So I'm going to do a little round guessing. So if you're 11 and 82.
Yeah, I went to college in 88 through 92.
Yeah, there had to have been meters at that point.
And I might have had one, but to tell you I never got low blood sugar in 4.5 years compared to what I deal with now is shocking to myself.
Well, you never got low because you probably never had enough insulin, right?
Correct.
Yeah. When did you switch to a faster acting insulin? Like, did you go to Lente, Ultra Lente? Did you?
No.
You
Humalog.
You went right from beef and then to.
Oh, no. Beef and pork to
Your regular and MPH Lantus. In there?
Yeah, I did MPH in regular originally. And then I had Lantus and I had like, I forget, something during the day before the pump. And then I started a pump in 2004.
2004 is when you started pumping.
Medtronic.
Well, there wasn't another option, was there?
No. Well, and it was also the best one at the time.
Yeah. No, that's what their salespeople told everybody.
Yep.
Question.
Yeah.
What was the management like at the doctor's office? Were you going to a yearly, quarterly, semi-annual? Yep. You were. And what did they test? Your blood? Like, how do they tell you? You're doing great. You're not doing great. Like, how does that get measured?
So I went to the endocrinologist or regular. Yeah, I went to Jocelyn in Boston, but I went to the endocrinologist. I never remember hearing about an A1C, honestly, until the early 2000s. But it was blood. It was, what are your blood sugars? And I would either give them a download at that point. I think you could stick it into your computer, which you still can do. But and then the pump and everything. But they were like, okay, you're doing okay, until I got my first of two bad complications in college. And that made me wise up.
Yeah, I'm going to get to that in just a second. But you called it shameful a minute ago. And I thought, I don't know how, but I'm trying to.
And it will make me cry at some point during this podcast.
Oh, good.
I'm a crier.
Good, because I'll cry if you cry. Just great. No. Just so you know, we'll be weeping together on a freaking podcast. And yeah. I got a note last night. I was up late working, and I did like, sometimes I jump on the Facebook group and I'm just like, look, I'm here working. I'm doing like this mind numbing thing. If you guys want to ask me a question, go ahead, which is seems to be a very popular thing on the Facebook group. Mm-hmm. And one of the people said, I just want to tell you that my kid was in the back seat. So I started crying during an episode that went live yesterday. It was one of the myth episodes, and somebody just had shared something horrible. And as I'm reading it, I was just like, and it made me cry. And I said, I was like doing it with Jenny. And I was like, Jenny, I was like, don't cry, Scott, don't cry. And like, I'm doing that. Well, apparently this lady's little kid in the back seat's like, don't cry, Scott.
How cute.
I don't know. I think they were mocking me. Don't you think? They're like, look at this.
No. Yeah. Well, maybe. I don't know. My kid mocks me and she's 13, so it's her job. But I asked her for tricks to not make myself cry today and she didn't have any. So.
Well, so my question is like, is it really shameful or is it just the best you were doing? Or did you know there was more you were supposed to be doing and you were just like,
There was more I could have done.
Diabetes comes with a lot of things to remember. So it's nice when someone takes something off of your plate. US Med has done that for us. When it's time for Arden's supplies to be refreshed, we get an email. Rolls up and in your inbox says, hi Arden, this is your friendly reorder email from US Med. You open up the email, it's a big button that says, click here to reorder, and you're done. Finally, somebody taking away a responsibility instead of adding one. US Med has done that for us. An email arrives, we click on a link, and the next thing you know, your products are at the front door. That simple. USMed.com/juicebox or call 888-721-1514. I never have to wonder if Arden has enough supplies. I click on one link, I open up a box, I put the stuff in the drawer, and we're done. US Med carries everything from insulin pumps and diabetes testing supplies to the latest CGMs like the Libre 3 and the Dexcom G7. They accept Medicare nationwide, over 800 private insurers, and all you have to do to get started is call 888-721-1514 or go to my link, usmed.com/juicebox. Using that number or my link helps to support the production of the Juice Box podcast.
I didn't take it seriously. I didn't think, retinopathy exists. I was like, I might lose a leg, a toe, a foot. Like, not that that's not serious, but all I heard of is that and dialysis, like my biggest fear, which I knock on wood don't have. But those were the things that were, they tell you. And
as a kid, do you remember thinking, I got 10 toes. I could give one away.
No, I didn't even think about it, honestly.
At all.
Ever.
But they told you.
I mean, yeah, and the diabetes training book that you got that had the Pink Panther on it.
I was going to say, were you going to say the Pink Panther book?
Yeah, sure was. That's what they had.
You are old.
I am.
Although I just saw somebody just had it recently online. They're like, we just got this. I'm like, oh my God, they're giving that to people still?
Oh my God, that should be, yeah, that's outdated. Quite.
Nothing like, you know, using a cartoon character on a book for people that no one has any connection to whatsoever. They're like, what is that? Like Pepto-Bismol man? You know what I mean?
Like, yeah, nobody alive now like knows who that was.
I don't know that people know what Pepto-Bismol is. What do you think of that?
No, I do because my mother-in-law has to use it a lot. So anyway.
There's got to be something else. So anyway, you're oversharing. I'll decide when you're oversharing. You're doing fine so far. listen, there's something wrong with me. I got up this morning and I read this. What are some of the themes you hope to cover on your episode? Type 1 for over 40 years, and then you describe some of your issues. And I was like, oh, this is going to be really interesting. I think most people would go, oh, this is horrible. And I was just like, oh, I can't wait to talk to her about this.
Oh, thanks. Yeah, well, no. I should probably get to those, right? I'm probably, like I said, I overshare and kind of circle the drain, but Amy, undiagnosed ADHD.
Probably, I don't know what you're talking about. I never know what people are talking about when they say that. They're like, oh, I'm all over the place. I'm like, you're not. We just had a very cogent conversation. We understand your background now. You're not all over the place. Don't worry. I think some people have an expectation that conversation's supposed to move along like a bullet point list.
Yes, which I made for myself.
But too I don't many years feel that working. Way.
Yeah. Okay, good.
I think of conversation like ping pong.
That makes sense.
I say something, then you say something. And then I go, oh, that was interesting. And then I say something to that. And I don't care where it goes to be perfectly honest. And I think when you're listening to it, it's actually more natural to listen to two people have their thought and continue talking than it is to hear people like in a stilted way say, well, we are now done talking about point number three. I'm now going to speak about point
correct.
Number
three. Yeah, yeah, I've been to way too many of those types of meetings. I don't. The podcast is interesting. Yeah, yeah. So I don't need to go to...
Okay, so you feel ashamed now.
Yeah.
And I'm sorry for that.
I don't know if it's ashamed, but...
What is it? How do you feel about what happened? You mad?
Mm-mm. You're going to make me cry, but these are my fault. That I don't have a stomach anymore, and I have retinopathy, too.
You think it's your fault? Do you really think it's your fault, though?
Sure.
But what did you know? I mean, you got it when you were 11. In 82, nobody knows anything, right? They're still telling you, like, here, luckily we have this. You can take it, and this will keep you alive. But they were probably, in 82, they're probably still thinking shortened lifespan for people with type 1.
Sure, yep.
Yeah, so they're not...
But my dad also said, by the time you're 16, they're going to find a cure.
Oh, they did that one to you, too?
Yeah, oh, sure, in the hospital.
Okay, Amy, you keep crying if you have to. I'm going to keep talking.
No, I'm sorry. I'm already crying 20 minutes in, but that's fine. I'm done with it. But I know I could have done better. So,
Amy, is this a challenge? You don't think I can get you to cry one more time?
Oh, no. We 100% can, for sure. Yeah.
Well, what I was going to say is that, you know, I make this statement a lot on the podcast to doctors, that when you say something to somebody like that, you run the risk of it going one of two ways.
My dad said it.
Yeah, but it's to me. He probably says it to you so you'll feel hopeful.
Correct. But, and honestly, who knew at that point?
Right. But what if instead it makes you feel like, oh, only 5 years, I don't have to look that close at it. It's almost over.
Correct.
And then those 5 years turn into 10 years. And then before you know it, you're crying on a podcast, a thing that didn't exist in 1982.
Exactly. And neither did computers when I first went to college. But I tell people
all the time, I make a living with a bunch of stuff that did not exist when I was in high school.
Yep.
So, but anyway, my point is, they started you in a hole. You know what I mean?
Correct. And I'm not saying my parents didn't help manage it, but I mean, they did. Because I lived with them and they were responsible for what I ate, but I'm the one that gave my medicine always. I'm the one that did my blood sugar. And then in college, I'm the one that ate and sometimes drank.
But you were just shooting a predetermined amount of insulin, right?
Correct. Until eventually a sliding scale, but that didn't come till much later. And then maybe counting carbs, and that I had already had diabetes for such a long time then that the first complication was already there.
Yeah, but Amy, so my point is that I know other people who live through beef and pork insulin and all the way up.
Yeah.
And they don't have complications, but maybe what they had was a doctor who gave them the right proportion of insulin to use.
Maybe.
Or are you saying that you ate so much more over what you were telling people you ate that there couldn't have been enough insulin?
Yes.
All right.
I wasn't telling anyone what I ate.
Are you disappointed or sad?
Both.
Who are you disappointed with? Besides yourself. Anyone else?
No.
And sad because?
I don't know. I have a lot of medical problems that I wouldn't have if I didn't blow off a lot of years. Like a lot, like half the time I had diabetes.
Do you live with this like still daily, or is it just coming up because we're talking about it?
No, it's coming up because we're talking, and okay. I also go to therapy, but yeah. And also I have been so lucky. Number one, great insurance and like a life-changing surgery for my gastroparesis. Yeah. And I have really good retina doctor. So I'm really, really, really lucky, but I've spent a lot of time on medicines,
yeah,
stuff like that.
I was talking to a friend yesterday, like a grown human being with like, you know, jobs and like established lives and everything. And she's trying to get a very simple medication. And her, like, they won't give it to her. She's like, I always thought I had good insurance. And
until you have to make 1,000 calls.
Yeah, but you know what it was? It's just small family. It's just her husband, and one child. They were never really sick people. And I said, yeah, this is the first time you're trying to use your insurance. And she's like, it kind of is. And I was like, yeah, I'm like, trust me, if you would have like given birth to Arden 19 years ago, you would have figured out very quickly if you had good insurance and you would have done something about it if you could have. But I take your point about how lucky you are to have it. So, okay, Amy, what's the first complication? And it came in college, but that's fast.
Yeah, I went to Syracuse and I was a senior and in the shower, and all of a sudden I saw a huge black circle in my eye, which I thought was a bug. Never knew what retinopathy was. Got out of the shower, tried to get it out of my eye, and realized it was in like behind the eye, whatever.
Yeah.
Called my parents and they called my doctor, and I flew home and went to a really good retina specialist at Mass Eye and Ear, who I still see to this day. That was in 1991. Mm. And he saved my eyes, and he's the reason I can see. I had lots of laser surgery in both. And then a couple years after that, I had a vitrectomy in the left eye, which is taking the vitreous part of, like, the jelly part of your eye out. I had that. But knock on wood, the last laser I had was in the 90s. And I still see the same retina specialist who's in his 80s, and I beg him every year not to ever, ever retire. But he saved my eyes.
Two thoughts. That was just 9 years with diabetes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
High blood sugar for 9 years.
Yeah. And when you said the procedure and you said it's when they take the jelly out, I want everyone to know that inside of my head, a voice, you know, the sea turtles in Finding Nemo?
Yep.
There was a voice in my head that went, the jellies.
Oh my gosh.
And then a different voice that said, what the hell is wrong with you? Sorry.
That's okay.
Yeah, the voice that was what the hell was wrong with me, that was actually me talking to myself. So, wow. I can't imagine how scary that is to be in college and have that happen.
It was.
Yeah.
Luckily, I had access to really good doctors and got home fast and went back to college. And I remember having to go to like an interim retina specialist in middle of nowhere, Syracuse. No offense to Syracuse.
Yeah, you're in the. It's not even fair to call it the woods.
Yeah, they didn't even have a mall until I was a senior. Yeah, so
you're in the forest.
100%. Yeah, it was not great. I think I had to take a bus and then get a shot in my. Yeah, it was a good time. Mm. But other than cataract surgery, and yes, I sound like I'm my grandmother. Cataract surgery in both eyes a couple years ago. Knock on wood, I still see my retina specialist once or twice a year.
And your vision's okay?
It's sometimes it's 20 2020 or 2025. And yes, which is awesome to me.
Yeah. Do you have other complications besides
yes
gastroparesis in this?
Yeah.
What else do you have?
I have another autoimmune disease.
Oh.
But not another complication. I have rheumatoid arthritis that I got 4 years ago.
Oh, like at the holidays or did it come UPS?
No, it was like a New Year's thing.
All right.
In January. Yeah.
Out of nowhere?
One weekend, I'm like, my hands look really like bent and they hurt. And I thought, oh crap, I have neuropathy in my hands. Mm. I didn't. I had tests, but it was literally like one day I was fine. And then all of a sudden my hands started hurting a lot, went to get a lot of tests. And I tested, I forget what the name of the test, but it was negative on the tests. The blood test came up negative or some.
A lot of people talk about having RA, but with negative tests.
Yes. Actually. So I had to get an MRI and I had it. And, you know, they mention all the scary medicine that you have to take, that you're going to lose a face. You're not going to have this. You're going to get like whatever. And so I'm like, I don't want to take any of these these immunosuppressants, but I am taking Humira.
Yeah, I was going to say you're doing an injectable.
Yep.
Once weekly, right?
Yep.
Yeah, I know that because that's the commercial. Once weekly, Humira.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and when you hear the commercial, like, you could get lymphoma. You could lose an eye. Like, all this stuff. Yeah. And my mom's like, don't take that. I'm like, I have to.
Yeah.
I tried. Like, I have to. But if I keep exercising and stuff, it helps so much that it doesn't get worse. And right now, knock on wood, it's pretty stable.
Your hands, like, curling up? Were they getting lumpy?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yep. And so it looks like osteoarthritis on the outside, but that's no. And I only have it in my hands for now.
Does the Humira help you with anything else?
No. Hmm. And every time I get sick more, or if you have like a cold or anything, you can't take it. Or if you have surgery, you know, you can't take it.
Because it weakens your immune system.
Yes.
Right.
Yep.
I always think like everybody's always like complaining about. Not complaining, like there's this, you know, worldwide attempt to like impact inflammation in people.
Oh, yeah. And like eat this diet.
Yeah.
Like, anti-inflammatory.
Right. And you know, when you read that, you're like, oh, come on. That's not going to help me.
Yeah. Don't eat mushrooms. Don't eat that. Right. Don't. Yeah. Like the Tom Brady diet.
I just wonder when it's going to be that, you know, some doctor or some scientist figures out like how much tiny little bit of whatever Humira is or one of those drugs is going to just turn people's like immune system down just a teensy bit. You know what I mean? And get rid of like some of that inflammation. I'll tell you the other day, I mean, I've been, if you listen to the podcast, and I don't know if you do or not, but
I do.
Oh, okay. So I've been losing weight with Wegovy since March now. Yep. Like, and I'm down like 33 pounds, 35. I was down 35. Well, here it is. I was down 33 pounds and I was sitting pretty like stably. I was like, I'm not losing any more weight, but I guess I will one day. And I get a little sick and they put me on a steroid pack. So steroid packs for me are terrific because they make, first of all, I feel like Superman, and they, and they also make me, any excess water I have in me, I expel in the first like 6 hours of taking it. And I, you know, I'm on the steroid pack and 2 days later I jump on the scale. I've lost 3 pounds. And I'm like, and that's just water weight that my body should not hold on to. Like I wasn't dehydrated, like nothing like that. I was hydrating and everything, but my body just seems to hold on to like 3 pounds.
It doesn't want to go down past that point. That's your set point.
I don't
or
know.
Something.
And I always think like it's a steroid pack. Like, right. What does that do? Like,
it's like a diuretic for you.
Yeah. For me, it's a diuretic. It's really interesting. I'm like, I don't know. I'm sure one day, I'm going to talk about myself so much on here that one day someone's just going to send me an email and they'll be like, here's everything that's wrong with you. We figured it out. And can you shut up and stop talking about it if I tell you how to help yourself? but anyway, I always like, I imagine that like inflammation in general is something that scientists have to be. I mean, that'd be a $1 billion product if you could just turn that down a little bit for people. But, I mean, think of all the people who come on here with, you know, ADHD, or they talk about, you know, I'm bipolar, I have bipolar in my family, and there's also a lot of autoimmune in my family. Like, if you could just not, you know what I mean? Just not make it so you're getting sick all the time, but a little bit.
A little smidgen of something.
I'm not sure if that's how, like, you know, medicines work, but in my mind, that's what they should be trying. Anyway, so eyes are in college, 22. You do what you're doing and do what you do. When does the gastroparesis come?
So in the late 90s, so I'm in my late 20s, I'm married, not to my current husband, but I was married, and I was starting to get nauseous like all the time. And just a side note, I have such a phobia to throwing up, like such a phobia.
Arden doesn't like it either.
Oh my God. I mean, does anyone like it? No, but I got thrown up on in Disney World when I was a kid. And ever since, I have a phobia about being sick, being around sick people, like hate it.
By Goofy?
So
Goofy? Who threw up on you?
No, I was at a luau at the Polynesian, which was one of two hotels that existed. So yep, long time ago. And a kid threw up on my back.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Like a stranger?
Yes. So I literally have such a phobia and then end up with a really bad complication I'd never heard of that makes you nauseous every single day. So I didn't know that at first. I had all the tests, the stomach tests, and then the infamous gastric emptying study, which I've had two of. The first one, I laid on a steel table with the camera over me and a Walkman in my ears, because that's all that existed, for 4.5 hours. Mm-hmm. That's how long it took for the egg whites with the dye on it, or the oatmeal, I forget which one, to digest.
Fun.
And they, yeah, it was a good time. Mm-hmm. And they said, you have gastroparesis, et cetera, et cetera. And I started trying all this different medicine, which there's nothing great, honestly, I have to tell you, and ended up being on Regalin. Not great, for 18 years. I was nauseous every single day for over 18 years. Some days bad, some days not that bad. I worked, still work through this whole time, but ended up having to get a work at home accommodation, which wasn't popular back then.
Yeah.
Because it was easier to manage at home when I was nauseous. Some days it was really bad, so I'd need to take Zofran and Compazine, but those would make you tired, so it wasn't great. I had to go to the ER a couple times for IVs of those when it was very bad, but luckily I had it way less terrible, I guess. That's an improper phrasing of that, but I went to a motility disorder support group once where most of the people couldn't work. They were on TPN, like feeding tubes.
Oh,
I see. In the ER, throwing up all the time, and I'm like, so I was like, okay, I'm not as bad as that. Like, I'm okay, whatever. But I still felt awful. In the early 2000s, I heard about Medtronic MiniMed. It had this humanitarian device called a gastric neurostimulator, which is basically a stomach pacemaker. Mm-hmm. But it wasn't approved by the FDA because, I don't know, it wasn't, and they could put it in, et cetera. But it took 2 years of begging, meetings, people presenting to the board of directors at Beth Israel in Boston. And finally, I got a stomach pacemaker in 2001. I was the first one to get it in Boston. It helped because it would send electrical impulses to my stomach and make the food digest better than it was, instead of just sitting there all the time.
Yeah.
So it helped to a point. And I would say from 2001 till 2015, I had it adjusted about 100 times, which means like they put a little, looks like a circle, I don't know the official thing, over you, and they turn the settings up so it moves faster. And then eventually the battery runs out in 5 to 7 years and you have to get it replaced, which I had to do once.
You know, Amy, you're the first person who's ever brought this up on the podcast. Like,
I know.
I'm aware of it because Jenny knows somebody who's had one.
Yeah.
And that's why, so I've had private conversations about it, but I have to be honest with you. I just kept waiting. I was like, someone's going to bring it up eventually, you know?
Yeah.
I'm sorry it's you.
That's why I wanted to be on here because, I hadn't heard anyone talk about it, but admittedly, I haven't listened to every.
What do you mean? We're done.
One of the
you haven't
thousand.
Listened to everyone.
Almost.
Okay. I lovingly anyway. Made these 1,000 podcasts for you, and you don't have the decency. No, I'm just kidding.
No, but back to me. Yeah. So I was kind of existing with still being nauseous, still being on tons of Regulin. It made you pee a lot. It made you thirsty, whatever. And every time I went to the doctor, they're like, you know, you really need to cut back on that. It has a black box warning with the FDA because it can cause bad permanent side effects like tardive dyskinesia, which is like neurological tics and things like that, that will not go away even if you stop taking the meds.
Wait, tell me again, which med does that?
Regulin.
And that's part of the, for your pain in your stomach?
Well, it's not, it was for the nausea.
The nausea,
and it also helped with the motility.
Okay.
It helped move things along, but it made you tired. It made you go to the bathroom all the time. I just thought that was me going to the bathroom all the time.
Amy, let's take a sidebar for a second. Tell people what gastroparesis is in case they don't know.
So it's a motility disorder where the nerves in your stomach are damaged. So food sits in your stomach and doesn't pass through like it normally should. Mm-hmm. It sits there and you get nauseous from it sitting there. And then it will digest eventually, but in my case, not normally.
Yeah.
So things with higher fat, et cetera, or lots of fiber would take even longer. I'd spike blood sugar, like I'd be low, and then I'd be 400. Mm-hmm. Even with like back in the day, dual wave bolus, et cetera.
Yeah, because the digestion is, so couple things here for people so we can kind of speed everybody up. First thing is back then when a doctor is saying to Amy, hey, you know, you don't want to lose a toe, you know, what they're saying is like, you know, you could have nerve and, you know what it is when you can't feel your toes, that's nerve damage. No one ever says to you, there's nerves in your stomach too, by the way, helps digest food. Those could get hit instead. Or, you know, like that's not the kind of stuff that anybody thinks about, but that's exactly what this is. This is just it's just the nerves not carrying the signal telling your stomach, like make squishy, squish up the food and make it into poop. Like it's just that literally is not happening. So they tried to give you this pacemaker to like stimulate. It helped, you're saying, but not, it wasn't terrific.
But not enough. I was still like, okay, I'm working, but I'm existing. Like at this point, I'm married to my husband, Dave, and love of my life, and have a daughter who we adopted at birth. I still, like, I couldn't do a lot of stuff. I couldn't go out. I had to cancel at the last minute because sometimes I was like overwhelmingly nauseous. So I'm like, what else exists? I've tried everything, compounded drugs in Canada, like everything.
Canadians.
Yeah.
I'm just kidding.
Someone said Botox in the stomach. Never tried it. I guess it could help, but never. I don't see how, but really? That never became a thing. So I started Googling, as we do. And I found out that people could have gastric bypasses sometimes, and it would treat the gastroparesis and it could help or make it worse. So that didn't seem great. Mm-hmm. But I also heard of an acid reflux surgery they were doing in Boston because they advertised. And I went there. And at this point, I was, I would say, obese, but not like morbidly obese, but a good size, let's just say. And I went to the hospital and talked about the acid reflux surgery, and they said to me, well, you have gastroparesis. We can't do the surgery on you. And obviously, you're not malnourished. So there's nothing we can do.
Oh, thanks.
Thanks.
Appreciate it.
Yep. You're on Weight Watchers. Like, you're not starving. So that there's nothing we could do. Anything we could do is drastic.
So let me ask a couple of questions.
Yeah.
Has your weight always been an issue, or did it start at a certain time?
It started when I was 14. After like sneaking the food, and then I was on some kind of diet in my whole life after that. Well, I always was.
Your parents don't notice, they think you're eating one thing, but you're gaining weight.
They knew I was gaining weight.
But did they know why?
Not specifically until now.
Oh,
Okay. No, that's okay. I gave him a heads up. It's fine.
Oh, okay. I was going to say, like, I mean, you're obviously getting more calories somewhere, but then I go back into my mind of the mid 80s and I don't know how much people even understood about nutrition, to be perfectly honest. I know that sounds crazy.
No, I get it, because we didn't read labels. We're like, oh, a piece of wheat bread is two bread exchanges or whatever. So,
yeah. So, you know, as processed foods are becoming more and more popular, there's a whole generation of people there who just think of food as, like, you know, apples and simplicity, and, you know, like, because that's how they grew up with their foods were simple and not overprocessed. Yep. And everything. And then they start introducing all this into the world, and it's really thought of as, like, you know, a savior, like, oh, no one's gonna starve, look what we figured out how to do, you know.
Yep.
Genuinely, people didn't know how bad it was for you. I have no remembrances of my mom saying, like, here's bad food that I've bought for you. Like, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah, we weren't allowed to have junk food in my house. A dessert was like maybe homemade pudding, but barely ever. It was like fruit.
Oh, homemade pudding sounds horrible.
It is. Mom, it really wasn't, but it can be. We had fruit and then even Halloween candy. Like, Halloween, not fun for a diabetic in the 80s, I'll tell you that. So I didn't like Halloween. I still don't.
So your weight just continues?
Yeah, I mean, I'm on a cycle of losing weight, gaining weight. Like, when I went on the pump, I gained 12 pounds in the first week because, like, what I heard Jenny say the other day is, like, you're probably peeing out some of your calories because your blood sugar's out of control.
Yeah.
And then it rained in. I'm like, how did I gain 12 pounds in a week? Like, I'm doing good. And, you know, so I was on.
You were on the DKA pump. Diet. You were.
Not on purpose.
No, not on purpose, but yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, for sure.
Hold on. There's a lot going on here. I'm trying to bring it all together. Be nice if
I'm sorry I'm taking too long. Like, we might be out of time soon.
You think you're out of... Amy, stop it. I make a podcast. What else do you think I have going on today?
Well, you're popular. I booked this in last October.
Well, my popularity aside.
You have, like,
aside,
a waiting list.
The waiting list is extraordinary. If you signed up today in September, I think you could get a date in March, but that's because I've been holding the dates back. I'm about to open the floodgates online and let people know, but I'm actually going to do something that I haven't done before. I'm actually going to, like, announce that I'm taking new people on the podcast. You know, I've never done that. I've never once
said... No, because you have a waiting list.
Yeah, I've never once on the podcast said, hey, if you'd like to be on the podcast, send me an email. I've never said that before. So, because I've never...
Buckle up, you're about to get flooded.
We'll see what happens. I'm interested in trying. We'll see what goes. My question that I've been holding back this whole time, and then you started talking about your weight, and if I'm being honest, I thought, oh, maybe this never happened, but did you ever, like, restrict food to make your stomach feel better, like just not eat?
I didn't restrict it, but I went on special, like... that I don't think they called it the gastroparesis diet, but basically don't eat any raw vegetables, cut vegetables up very small. Everything has to be cooked. Basically drink water, like literally don't eat peanut butter. Don't eat this. Like,
cried. I've heard of the gastroparesis diet, but, like,
yeah, it's a good time.
It's not a fun list of foods, but did it ever occur to you, like, my stomach hurts because there's food in it that won't digest. I'm just going to fast for 3 days and see if I feel better. Now, why did that never occur to you?
I don't know, because I was nauseous all the time, but sometimes still able to eat. Most times still able to eat.
Right.
Do
you have a problem with food, do you think?
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah.
I did. Now I don't have much of a stomach, so can't really eat much.
We took care of that. But we'll get to that. Look at you.
Little spoiler.
That's right. Yep. So I've had times where, like, I don't feel well, and I'm like, and I'm not saying nutritionally this is a good idea or obviously sustainable, but, you know, there's times where I'm like, I don't want to go to the bathroom again. I'm just not eating.
Yeah, that never occurred to me.
Oh, okay.
Because I was always hungry.
Do you have the food voice?
Weirdly.
That you hear people talk? Yeah, people now that, like, Wegovy and Ozempic are big for weight loss and stuff, you hear a lot of people who have trouble with food talk about how that drug takes away their food voice.
It does. It and I've heard a lot about it because since I've had bariatric surgery, a lot of the people who've had that have also take that now.
Yeah.
Just to stop the cravings. But for me, it slows down your digestion.
So. Yeah, no, I thought about that. I was like, there's no way you can take that. It slows digestion.
Oh, no. Plus, I'm good for now.
But my point is that I've heard people say.
It works so well. I mean, obviously.
Trust me. I know. It's amazing. Yeah. But I've heard people say, like, I wake up and my first thought is, what am I going to have for breakfast? As I'm making breakfast, before I'm eating it, I start thinking, what am I going to have for lunch? And it's not.
I was like that. Yeah, I'm not anymore.
The procedure stopped that?
For the most part, yeah.
Okay. It's interesting. Yep. Just how psychological the whole thing is.
Well, it also shuts off, for the first year or two, the ghrelin hormone, which is the one that says you're hungry or sends the signals to the brain. Mm-hmm. It like is turned off, basically.
Yeah.
And then I never let any of the foods back in that I could have by this point because I had the surgery for pretty much a different reason, and right. I don't have another chance.
Did the surgery lead to weight loss?
Yeah, I lost 75 pounds.
Oh, that's crazy. How long?
Yep.
Year?
Yeah, pretty much, yeah. And it's been 8 years since I had the surgery.
It's a hell of a thing to get saddled with, like the food voice and a weird relationship with eating when on top of it you have gastroparesis. Like it just seems doubly cruel. You know what I mean?
Yep.
Yeah.
And I had a lot of high blood sugar and low blood sugar spikes too with when I didn't listen to myself.
I wonder if people know. I mean, if you've heard the Pro Tip series, I would imagine this would not be surprising to you. But you know, your blood sugar going up from food is because your food goes in your stomach and it starts being digested. That whole process happens. Glucose is pulled out and sent to your blood. Insulin's the key that unlocks that cell that lets the sugar back out of your blood. You don't have the insulin. So boom. Right. But I wonder if they think, well, if you eat and you have gastroparesis, then the process of digestion doesn't start. So you can't bolus like a normal person would because the insulin starts working well before the food starts impacting you.
Yes. Yeah. And so when I had gastroparesis when I got the first pump after the gastroparesis, the Medtronic MiniMed had a dual wave bolus and some other type of dual bolus situation where you could give like half up front and then the rest over a period of time.
There you're showing your diabetes age. Jenny does it too. Sometimes she goes, it's a square wave bolus. I'm like, people call those.
Yeah, that's the other one.
Yeah, I'm like, people just call those extended boluses now. And she's like, whatever.
Yes, yeah. Correct. But I don't do those because I'm on the Omnipod 5, who is
a
sponsor.
Oh, they are. Omnipod.com/juicebox. I'm sorry. It's Pavlov's
and the
dog.
Dexcom. Yeah.
Say any of them. I swear to you, you could say a sponsor's name out loud. I could do a nice tight 90-second commercial for you right now off the top of my head.
So, oh, I know. I could too, probably from listening to podcasts.
I hope they heard that.
But Dexcom literally has saved my life.
Tell me how.
Or maybe because I lost consciousness so many times.
Oh, wow.
Well, before the Dexcom and then after the Dexcom, the CGM has alerted my husband and my dog who loves glucose. So
he's just excited that sugar is being eaten.
Yes. Yep. When the alarm goes off, he lays on my leg and barks for glucose.
I assume everyone's dog is a boy because...
Yeah, same. But my dog is.
Yeah. Well, do you know why I think that?
No.
I have this, like, who would get a dog that they had to, like, manage a period for? That sounds horrible.
No, I've heard it happen, but we always had... When we had female dogs when I was a kid, we would get them spayed, so...
Oh, wait, that takes care of that?
It does. Unless you're a breeder and you want to breed the dog.
You think David Spade doesn't bleed?
What?
I said, do you think David Spade doesn't bleed? He came pre-Spade. By the way, do you know David Spade and Kate Spade are related?
Yeah, that was his. I thought she was his sister-in-law.
Yeah, she was his sister-in-law.
Yeah.
She took her own life,
guess what,
right?
My favorite.
Yeah, my gosh.
I love people.com. It's like. I shouldn't say that out loud, but yeah, that's my favorite. So
that's where you hear about what happened to famous people.
That's what I get the hard hitting news. Yeah.
Do you know one time there was an app out that like, it was about like famous people's faces or something like that. And I swear to you, Arden comes into the kitchen one day and she goes, I give up. And I'm like, why? She goes, you're in this app.
Oh my God.
And I was like, well, that's a mistake, first of all. Someone's made a horrible mistake, where it's just some algorithm just pulling images from the internet. And she goes, I can't believe you're in this app. I don't even remember what the app was called. But anyway, I'm you know, as far as that
famous people that have a podcast or something.
So I mean, how could I listen? Let's be clear. I'm not famous. If you take me to a diabetes, you know, thing, and there's 500 people in there who have type one, their kids have type one, I'm George Clooney.
There's a line.
Yeah, yes. For a couple of hours. But like, yeah. You walk outside that building and, you know, people would hit me with their car and not think twice about it. So it's, you know, it's a weird juxtaposition for me. But, and I don't know which I prefer. Actually, being at those things is like exhausting, because you're like aware that, I don't know how actual famous people do it.
Like,
yeah, because like I saw videos of myself from like 2 weekends ago that I don't know were taken.
Yeah, I think they were on your site, weren't they?
I embrace, but not just that one. That one I kind of thought I was being recorded, but like there's other ones where I'm like, people are pointing cameras at me and I'm unaware of it. And it's weird because I don't think of myself that way. So I don't know to constantly be carrying myself like somebody might be like taking a photo of me or something. Anyway, this is way off the point.
Yeah, I should probably bring it back.
This is your fault. Tell me, so you tried the like the belly zapper to mix.
I tried that.
Mix reviews. And then how do you end up with this surgery?
Yeah, so right. I started Googling, found out about the gastric bypass potentially helping. And so I went to my gastroenterologist locally and I mentioned, have you ever done this on a type one, or have you heard of anyone that had gastroparesis that had this? And he's like, no, but I know there's a doctor affiliated with the weight loss center that if anyone would know, it's him. Mm-hmm. So go see him. So that was in late 2014. I saw Dr. L, I'll say, right?
Dr. Larry, we'll call him. Like the three
Stooges. No, his name is not.
No, like the three Stooges, like Dr. Mo, Dr. Larry, Dr. Crowley. We'll call him Dr. Larry.
Oh, got it. Yeah. No, he's, I don't mind giving his name, but he's awesome. I mean, he's the best. He gave me my life back, honestly. So I went and saw him and talked to him about it. He said, I've never done gastric bypass on a type one. I do it on morbidly obese type twos. And I was obese at this point, but he's like, I'm intrigued. Let me talk to some motility doctors in Boston. Cause I live in central Mass, like a suburb of Boston, but I went to Boston doctors and local doctors. So he's like, let me do some research and I'll get back in touch. So he calls me back in early 2015 and says, there was a study done on 100 type ones with gastroparesis and they had gastric bypass surgery and 70% of them had a relief in symptoms. Mm. So I think I could do this surgery on you and you'd feel better. And I was like, okay.
Let's go. Yeah.
And he said, I want to do the gastric bypass and also a partial gastrectomy. I do not know how to spell that, which is a partial removal of the stomach. I don't think they do that with all bypasses, but it was to prevent the bile backing up from my liver and continuing the nausea for me.
Okay.
So my husband and I left and he's like, I don't want you to have the surgery. What if you die? Because, you know, most people thought, oh, gastric bypass, you could die, et cetera, et cetera. Now that's sort of a myth because it's not open surgery. It's laparoscopic, et cetera. So we thought about it. And I said to my husband, Dave, I said, if I don't try this, I'm always going to wonder if this could have helped.
Yeah.
So I said, I know you're worried, but I'd rather try than live feeling this sick.
Yeah. Amy, you were in enough pain and had been at it long enough that you thought
that I was like 18 years. Yeah.
If I die during this, then okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wow.
That wasn't what I wanted to happen, but I was like, I would rather risk it than be nauseous for the rest of my life and maybe be on a feeding tube at some point.
When you talk about that kind of nausea, like if you wake up at 3 a.m. to go to the bathroom, you're nauseous.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah. Just nonstop. Like
yep. Water. Well, torture. Sometimes it wasn't like I had breaks in it, but sometimes it was to the point where like I can't leave the house because I felt so nauseous that I would start to panic that I would get sick.
Oh, like, and that kid would yak on you with the thing.
In a theater. Yeah. I had my doctor and his team of Wonder insurance people got the surgery approved. And it was, I guess, experimental because I was still overweight, but didn't qualify weight-wise. So they were doing it for the gastroparesis and had the surgery August 14th, 2015, and haven't been nauseous since.
Wow.
He took my gastroparesis away pretty much. Like, so can, I have a pouch.
Oh, hold on one second before you tell me about that. Do you know what the function was? Like, how did it help?
Yeah, so it bypasses the stomach and the food goes into a small pouch and goes into the small intestine. Oh. So it's bypassing, basically, and I'm probably butchering the explanation of this, but it bypasses like the whole motility issue.
Hmm.
He thought I would feel better. It basically, and I don't want to say cured, like let's just put it in quotes, like I don't have that nausea anymore.
But the pain's gone.
Any of that, nothing. Yeah. He took out my pacemaker during the surgery and also because I didn't need it. Yeah. And yeah, I mean, I kept waiting. Like, so when I first woke up from surgery, I was super nauseous because anesthesia, and I had to have it at a Boston hospital because it was high risk. And I would, they kept giving me morphine, And I'm like, I don't want this. Take me off of the pain meds. I feel nauseous. And so I didn't realize I wasn't nauseous anymore till I got out of the hospital. I was there like 2 days.
Oh, because the pain meds made you nauseous.
Yeah, I get so nauseous from pain meds. I hate them. So they took me off of them and said, oh, you can take Tylenol, but since you're resisting like the other meds, you like, you don't need to stay here. And I'm like, okay.
They were just keeping you there to get you high? That was it?
Pretty much. Yeah. Well, yeah, I was slurring when my husband came to visit. So yeah, pretty much. Mm-hmm. And then you have to cheat. Like it's months before you can eat again. You're like on liquids for a while. There's a whole, it's not easy, but it was so worth it. And I mean, can I eat what I used to? No. And I probably could allow 90% of the stuff in smaller amounts to come back. I won't. Because I have a problem with food and some of those are trigger foods. And this is the only chance I'm going to get with this. Yeah. You can't have it done again. So I know that it's a huge gift and I don't want to mess it up.
Mm, good for you. On a much different level, I understand what you're saying. Like, I never thought I'd be this thin. Like,
yeah,
seriously.
I mean, yes, I'm thin now too. Yeah. But also like, I'm not sick. Every day.
Yeah. Oh my God. Please. The removal of the nausea and the torture alone just sounded amazing. Like, what a relief.
It was. Yeah. I mean, the only thing that's happened post surgery basically is I've had an extreme amount of lows, which honestly, I've had a lot of lows in my lifetime, but 7 episodes where I lost consciousness.
Why is that happening, do you think?
That most of it was before the Dexcom, the worst and was in 2016. My daughter was 8 at the time, alone with me. I laid down because I was tired, and then I'm in an ambulance. I had a seizure when I was home alone with her and I don't remember it. She FaceTimed my husband at work, showed him what I look like on the iPad, and the next thing I know, I'm in an ambulance and my blood was 13.
Mm.
And I had barely any blood pressure, barely any body temperature by the time I got to the hospital. But the best part of that, and I'm being sarcastic, was they sent social workers in because I was alone with her. And even though it wasn't done intentionally, they said it wasn't safe because I was alone with her and I could have died and she was there by herself. So
did they take your kid?
No, no.
I was like, these people in Massachusetts don't mess around.
No, but okay. Department of Child and Family Services called us after I got out of the hospital and interviewed myself and my husband.
Mm.
And my husband was pissed and yelled at them. He's like, she had low blood sugar. I was at work. What if one of us, God forbid, had a heart attack? Like, you don't plan it.
Yeah.
So they interviewed us over the phone and like, that was it. And they closed whatever case they had. But that was like bad.
Like Cole's like second Halloween we were sitting on the floor in this little condo we had, and we were carving pumpkins. And I left a knife on the floor, and Cole kicked it, and it cut his toe. Like, bad enough, we had to go to the hospital. And and we're, like, there, and they're fixing him up, and they're talking to us. And I'm like, what is happening? And then it hit me. I was like, oh, my God, they're trying to make sure we didn't hurt him.
Yep.
Yeah, I was like, it was interesting because we were young. And I mean, it's obviously it was such an accident and like shocking. But like, as it's happening, you're going, oh, I see what's going on here. I was like, I can't imagine, like, yeah, you have a low blood sugar. Like, what are you going to do about it?
You know? I woke up in the ER with a nurse yelling at me, like, how could I be alone with my kid?
Oh, maybe she should go to hell.
I see my daughter and my husband in the ER room, and like they're really worried because I guess I could have died.
Sure. No, I mean, obviously.
If my daughter wasn't supposed to be home either.
Oh,
she was sick, or she had a cold and didn't want to go to aftercare. And my husband was supposed to go to a Celtics game and not get home till like 9 o'clock at night. Mm. So I would have died.
I don't want to say this is
what, daughter not saved me.
Yeah, my God. I don't want to say this is what you get for being a Celtics fan, but I think honestly,
I get it.
It's what happens.
I'm from Boston. What do you expect?
I mean,
dog's name is Brady.
Of course it is.
Not my choice.
If I walk outside and yell Brady in Boston, every dog in town's going to run.
Every
at me.
Single dog and half the kids too.
I don't know why I was almost like, it almost made me laugh out loud thinking of like your daughter taking the iPad and being like, pointing it at you and going, hey, what's happening to the lady right now? Can someone like tell me what to do here? Like it's like such
she's better with technology than me. Yeah, she FaceTimed my husband and said, this is what mom's doing. And I was having a seizure.
Yeah. I just mean like it's like kids are amazing. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Not call 911, but hey, dad, what's happening here?
Somebody.
Yeah.
Hey, let me jump up on TikTok and DM a couple people, see if I can figure out what's going on here now.
Oh, 100%. That's what would have happened now. But yeah, so I had a Medtronic, and I'm not bashing them because they served a purpose for me for a while. Mm-hmm. But I had the first sensor that came out, which wasn't great. And I ran out of sensors because they would go bad all the time where you would get it would say bad reading or bad sensor, and then it would die, right? So I ran out, and I didn't have one on, and I fell asleep, and yeah, that's what happened.
They have a modern-looking sensor coming out.
I heard,
Maybe they, like, I mean, took a while, but...
Love Dexcom. They save me over and over, so yeah.
And you're using Omnipod 5 now?
Yep, and Dexcom.
How's that work for you?
It works really well for me. I still... like fidget with it, like I override it, much to my endo's dismay. It's pretty good.
Yeah, very nice. That's excellent.
I like it.
I mean, it's got to like it's like a different world from what you grew up in. It's
oh my God, crazy. Yeah. I mean, we wake up with alarms sometimes. Like I still get a lot of lows, honestly. But my A1C is between 5 and 5.5, and when it's below that, because it has been. My endo's like, you had too many lows, et cetera, et cetera. You know, like that whole thing. Because I've been 4.5. Yeah, that's not great because of the lows.
Why do you think the lows happen? Like, because, I mean, now you're on an algorithm. It's trying not to make you low. So is it something about your digestion or what do you think it is?
Sometimes I give too much of a bolus. Okay. And yes, I'm listening to the remastered pro tips.
Oh, good.
For the bump and nudge and also the... fix, like I'm pretty sure that something needs to be, well, it adjusts itself, but I probably need to reset it.
Yeah. I mean, you shouldn't be getting low that often. That's all.
I know.
Yeah. You're doing
the you know how much I spend in glucose? It's insane. I'm the reason they don't have any left on Amazon.
I figured this is the only sweet thing you're left eating. So you're like, this isn't bad.
Yeah, pretty much.
Well, yeah. I mean, you know, all honesty, if you're having that many lows, settings are wrong somewhere, or you're like being too aggressive with something somewhere.
Bolusing?
Like, yeah. I don't know. Exactly.
Probably the bolusing. Because I'm impatient. So if I spike after a meal, I'm like, oh my God, I got to fix it right away because I don't want any more complications.
What are we calling a low? What number?
70.
Mm-hmm. So you're treating a 70?
Yep. But not, I'm just doing a little... like one glucose gummy.
Yeah. Yeah.
Or one sip, not juice. I can't have it.
Do you treat a 70 that will stay at 70, or is it a falling 70?
It won't. It's a falling 70.
Okay. And then when you say you see a spike that you're like, I can't have this, I don't need more complications, what's that number for you?
150.
Okay.
Which is high. I mean, mm-hmm. my doctor's like, you can stay at 140, 150. I would love it. And then I hear all these people on the podcast or see them in the group, like, my kid was 110. Like, oh my God. And I'm like, 110? I love 110.
I wouldn't freak out about a 110. But did you ever say to the doctor, hey, you didn't have your stomach hurt for 18 years. You don't know what I'm trying to avoid here. You know?
She knows. Yeah. But she also said to me when I lost consciousness and ended up in the hospital with the seizure with my daughter, she said, I'm getting you a Dexcom right now.
Yeah.
And an Omnipod. And if that ever happens again, I'm not going to be your doctor, because I had had a lot of loss of consciousness, but that was the worst.
Yeah. I mean, I don't want to I'm not victim.
She doesn't want me to run low.
Yeah. But I mean, for you, like, I'm not victim shaming when I say this, but you're not good at this. So like
100%.
Yeah.
I mean, Oh my God. Yeah.
Right.
I know.
But better now and getting better still.
Yes.
How long have you been listening to the podcast?
2 years.
Have things gotten better since you started listening?
Yep.
Okay.
Yep. Because I still learn stuff all the time, and I'm an old time diabetic. Like, yeah. I learn tips, and like I said, I'm on number 3 of the remastered series, and I'm going to listen to all of them, because the last time I didn't listen to all of them.
Oh, you jumped around.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Scott told you to listen straight through. That Scott back then said specifically to people, I know you're going to want to skip over ones you don't think relate to you, but please just listen to them all. And then you were like, nah, I know better than him. Don't worry about it.
No, I'm like, I don't need to listen to the female hormones. I'm old. I'll skip that. I don't do MDI. I'll skip that.
Female hormones one's a great, like, it's a great episode just to kind of, like, understand, like, what happens when there are different impacts that you don't expect. Even if you don't have those hormones, it still applies to something that's happening to you.
You know, oh, correct. I need to listen. I'm listening to that.
I'm
this
talking
time.
To the other people at this point, Amy.
Oh,
you're sold. You're sold, obviously. But I'm just telling you that Jenny and I sat down and we put together a 26? Jesus, it's like a 26 part series. People are like, 26 parts. Just shut up and listen to it. And it really will. It really will help you. Like I genuinely believe you listen.
It does.
You listen to that pro tip series. You've got an A1C in the low sixes or the high fives.
Yep. Mine's in the mid to low fives.
Well, hell yeah. Yeah. I mean, you're low. But how
and
much?
I told my endo, I like quote you to my endocrinologist. I'm sure they love she's that. Sick of it.
Yeah.
No, she's good though. I have a great endocrinologist. I'm really lucky.
Do you go into Boston for your doctors?
Or nope.
You stay in the middle?
I stay in Concord, Mass at Emerson.
Like, you actually have a central Mass like dialect. Yeah. Yeah.
Yes.
You're not like real harsh, like you're on the coast, but it's still there a little bit. And you're,
oh crap, you're talking about my accent.
Yeah, your accent. Yeah,
that sucks. My husband has more of one because he grew up in Worcester.
You're also aggressive in a nice way.
Oh, nice.
I'm good with it because I grew up in Philly.
Yeah, no, I know.
You will not let me cut you off.
Oh, I cut everyone off.
Yeah, you're like, I'm not done talking yet. By the way, the one time you let me go, this is hilarious. Thank God I remember to bring this up. You're talking about the surgery for the gastroparesis, and I'm trying to understand the functionality of why did it help, and you were about to tell me, but you actually stopped and let me ask my question, and then you answered it, and I thought, oh God, she was just about to say this, and I stopped her, and you were...
No, it's fine.
You were nice about it, but yeah.
I'm always nice about it.
I don't think you're not nice, by the way. I just, you have a Northeast way about you that some people...
Oh, 100%.
Yeah, you get different parts of the country. It just sounds like we're like arguing with each other. And I'm just like, well, this is a lovely conversation. Oh my gosh. Did we miss anything? How's that list looking?
We're good. I have one daughter, but not like we adopted her as a newborn. Maybe that's out of order, but.
Wait, what? I know you have a daughter. You've been talking about her the whole time.
Yeah. So my husband has a really rare genetic condition, and I'm going to mess this up, but Fanconi syndrome. So it causes a problem with his bones, and his sister, his older sister, was the first one ever to get it. He's the second.
Oh, goody.
And it causes like short stature. And so he's short like me, and he gets a lot of stress fractures and stuff like that. It's okay. The old name was pseudofluorescent diabetes. No idea how to spell it, but it wasn't diabetes. So when we met online, and he said, oh, I just want you to know, I have this. And I said, I have diabetes. And he's like, well, that's that. And like, we've been together ever since, because we immediately bonded from having a chronic illness our whole lives as kids. Probably were at Children's Hospital together, never knew each other as kids.
But this is why you adopted.
Yeah, because they had never, I couldn't get pregnant with the pacemaker in my stomach. And they said, you'll have horrible morning sickness because of the gastroparesis. And Dave said, I don't want to pass this on to a child.
Yeah.
So, but we never thought we'd be able to adopt. We did like we looked at all different things, and we adopted our daughter, Maddie, in 2009 from Maine. And she was 2 pounds, 2 ounces. She was a preemie. So my insurance company loves us. She was in the NICU for months.
Wow. Wait, you adopted a preemie?
Yep.
And so you didn't even
2 ounces, and she's bigger than me now and taller.
Isn't that crazy? How did you find her?
So we went through a private agency in Maine, and they had a ranch in Mass, and we did an adoption profile, like a scrapbook, like a dear birth mother letter, and a set of birth parents picked us to adopt the baby before she was born. They met us. We met them in Maine, and Maddie, the pregnancy was high risk because the birth mother has an older than Maddie child, another biological child that she's parenting. And she was a preemie. She was born at 25 weeks, I guess. But Maddie was due on March 13th and was due on Christmas. It was born on Christmas Eve. Mm. She was 26 weeks and 8 days, like that. And we got a call on Christmas morning that she was born, and to take an hour, pack up our house, and be prepared to spend a few months up in Bangor, Maine.
Oh, in Maine.
In the winter.
Oh, my God. It's not even a real place. It's so cold.
No, it's not. They have a Subway and a Quiznos, or they did back then. Yeah, that's the Quiznos. Which we went to like every day.
Quiznos. Good for you, Maine. I've told this story before, but during my son's recruiting for baseball in college, there was a college in Maine that asked him to come play there. And it was such a good academic school that it was worth having the conversation. He's on the phone with the coach, and the coach is like, our field's heated.
Oh my God.
And my son's like, what the hell? Again, the benches in the dugout are heated. And Cole's like, where's Maine? I was like, I think it's Canada.
It's pretty close.
Yeah. And at the end of the call, the guy said, and every year we have a great hunt. Like, we get together and we go on a team hunt. My son's like, I want to play baseball in college, but I'm not up for shooting something and freezing my ass off for it. So I'm going to go no. And I was like, yeah. So people, by the way, would have been a great education. It was one of those things.
I know the school, I think.
Yeah, you probably do.
I think I do. My husband's friend went there. Mm. But super cold. Super cold.
Yeah, Cole's like, I'm not up for this.
So Maddie was born in a level 3 NICU, luckily. And we were there for 5.5 weeks in Maine. It was an amazing experience, actually. We were there. We took leaves from work, unpaid, and were with her, like parenting her from the first day.
I'm going to ask a difficult question.
Yeah.
Did you think there was a chance she might not make it?
Not really, because when we got there on Christmas Day, they said she was breathing on her own. And medically, she looked okay. They knew that the baby was going to be born early because the medical condition that the birth mother had.
Yeah.
And that she had a previous preemie. But she was breathing on her own.
Okay.
For the most part. So she looked perfect when we got there. She was this little tiny dot.
Matter of time.
She had a clementine for a head, like for the size. Let's just put it that way. Wow. She was a, yeah. And if you saw her now and she's taller than us, wow. Mm. So the NICU nurses called her a feisty broad, my baby.
That's lovely.
And she is one now as a 13-year-old. So yeah. So she does, and I probably shouldn't say this on the podcast because she might listen, doubt it. She has reactive attachment disorder. I don't know if you know what that is. I think there was somebody on the podcast who adopted from, I'm not sure if it was foster care or adopted an older child or something, but I remember listening to it on one of your episodes. And typically newborns don't get it. Sometimes they do. And my child has it's a neurological disorder from, I guess, from being adopted. A mental disorder.
A rare but serious condition in which an infant or young child doesn't establish healthy attachments with parents.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Oh, that's weird. I didn't know anything.
Yeah, about. So
I didn't
she mean has weird, it like, yeah, for yeah. the rest of her life.
So how does that present?
Lots of rage from her, breaking things. It's gotten better. We've had very expensive therapy for the family, and she goes to therapy. We all do. She needs extra help with some things because she has this need to be perfect. She feels shame from being adopted is what they tell us, but she won't let us talk about the adoption. She knows mm-hmm. we're super happy she's adopted. We're proud of it. We want to tell everyone, but she doesn't want to stick out.
Interesting.
So she doesn't want to feel different. She doesn't want any of that. And she looks like my husband. So she doesn't tell anyone. Mm. And yeah, but it's the best thing. We were so lucky.
Yeah.
So.
Oh, good. Well, I'm glad she's with you.
Me too.
I'm going to share something that happened in the middle of the conversation that I kept to myself at the time. But I am my birth mother, because I'm adopted. My birth mother died during gastric bypass surgery.
Oh, no.
That's the thing I found out, like, obviously.
I'm so sorry. Oh. I know she passed away because I heard you mention that. Oh.
Yeah, so.
When did she have it? Because.
It was a long time ago. So.
Yeah, people die. Died.
When we even considered, when my wife, let me just be clear. When my wife forced me to look into my, like, birth parents. Because, yes. Because I'm a boy. We do, right? And I didn't care. But that's what I learned. Like, she had. The way her sister explained it to me, became despondent over having to give up her baby and became morbidly obese through that process. No. Eventually tried to do something about it and had a cardiac arrest during the surgery.
Oh my gosh.
But she she was like 40, awful. Like in her early 40s, I think.
That's awful.
Yeah. I want you to know, like, I appreciate you saying you're sorry. I have no attachment to the idea at all. So,
I know.
Yeah. So
I've heard you talk about it before. Yeah. And I mean, honestly, Maddie's obviously a child. She doesn't either. Mm. And if that makes sense, like, doesn't want to talk about it, doesn't feel like the biggest gift that her birth mother gave her was to let us parent her. Yeah. Really, she doesn't get it. And hopefully she will, and she'll have a good, happy life.
Yeah. You learn a lot as you're growing up. That would probably be one of the things that...
Oh, she's smarter than us. She's 10 steps ahead of us.
I don't know. The FaceTime thing with the 911 instead of 911.
Yeah. No, that's her.
I was going to say, actually, when you told me about the reactive attachment, that actually, I was like, I wonder if she didn't have as much of a, like, oh my God, what's happening because of that? That actually is what happened to me. Like, when you said that, I was like, oh, I wonder if that had something to do with that.
No, she's probably like, oh, there's a landline here. I don't know what that is.
How do I use this phone?
Yeah, exactly. She probably had a phone then, actually. Yeah.
Well, Amy, I appreciate you coming on and sharing this with everybody. This was really terrific.
Sure.
Thank you.
Thanks.
No, it was really kind of you to do.
No, I'm hoping that somebody that has gastroparesis I hope nobody feels awful, but, and they haven't thought of different things to help, that I'm happy to talk to anyone, or maybe they'll do some research and can figure it out.
Okay. Well, it would be lovely. All right. When this episode goes up, we can tag you in the Facebook group if you want.
That'd be awesome. Okay. Do you know when it will go up?
Oh, sure. Like, yeah, sometime in the next year. I am a victim of my own success. I'm sorry.
Yes. No, it's okay. It's okay.
The odd thing is that it doesn't matter to the people who are listening.
At all. Yeah, I know.
the only thing that happens is, like, in a situation like this, I think, oh, this is information I'd like to get out. And I have this feeling almost every time I record, I'm like, I'm going to move this one up. Like, I always, yeah. like, I get done, I'm like, well, this one's going to have to go up next week, obviously, because of the thing someone shared. And then I think, oh, God, I thought that same thing yesterday and a week ago and last month. They just keep going. Just keep doing it the way you're doing it. So it's weird for you, but for the people listening, it's meaningless, you know, when we record versus when they get to hear it. And I already put them up. So I tried. I went to 5 a week. I was like,
yeah,
like,
I know. It's all-
I'm like, I'll catch up. And I still have a backlog of 80 episodes I'm looking at.
Oh, my gosh.
So
literally, like, this time next year, it should be up.
No, it'll be 6-7 months ish in that space. Who knows? Okay. Yeah.
Do I get to? I don't hear it before everyone else hears
no,
it.
No,
right?
No. That's not going to happen. I don't have the infrastructure
that's
for that.
No, that's okay. I'm scared with how bad my voice sounds. You know how you always think you sound much better when you're recording than you do? Yeah, that's me.
Not me. I love the sound of my voice.
No, your voice sounds great, but I'm worried about mine.
No, you sound terrific.
But my daughter fake records me.
I'm going to tell you what I tell everybody, and I'll say it while we're being recorded. You're the only one who has an expectation about what you sound like. No one else knows. You're a voice to everybody else. So you sound completely normal to everybody.
Well, that makes sense.
And you're not screechy. And like, because there's a couple of, I mean, I guess, like, let's not lie. There's a couple of voices that are hard to listen to, but like voice types, you don't have one of them.
Oh, good. Yeah. Okay.
You're terrific. You have a nice right. even voice. I love it.
Well, thank you.
Of course. Hold on 1 second for me. Jalen is an incredible example of what so many experience living with diabetes. You show up for yourself and others every day, never letting diabetes define you. And that is what the Medtronic Champion community is all about. Each of us is strong, and together, we're even stronger. To hear more stories from the Medtronic Champion community, or to share your own story, visit MedtronicDiabetes.com/juicebox and look out online for the hashtag Medtronic Champion. Thank you so much for listening. I hope you enjoy my full conversation with Jalen coming up in just a moment. A huge thank you to Eversense CGM for sponsoring this episode of the podcast. Are you tired of having to change your sensor every 7 to 14 days? With the Eversense CGM, you just replace it once every 6 months via a simple in-office visit. Learn more and get started today at eversensecgm.com/juicebox. Arden has been getting her diabetes supplies from US Med for 3 years. You can as well. usmed.com/juicebox or call 888-721-1514. My thanks to US Med for sponsoring this episode and for being longtime sponsors of the Juice Box podcast. There are links in the show notes and links at juiceboxpodcast.com to US Med and all of the sponsors. You have questions? Scott and Jenny have answers. There are now 19 Ask Scott and Jenny episodes. That's where Jenny Smith and I answer questions from the audience. If you'd like to see a list of them, go to juiceboxpodcast.com, up into the menu, and click on Ask Scott and Jenny. I know that Facebook has a bad reputation, but please give the private Facebook group for the Juice Box Podcast a healthy once-over. Juice Box Podcast, Type 1 Diabetes. The group now has 47,000 members in it. It gets 150 new members a day. It is completely free. And at the very least, you can watch other people talk about diabetes. And everybody is welcome. Type 1, type 2, gestational, loved ones, everyone is welcome. Go up into the featured tab of the private Facebook group. And there you'll see lists upon lists of all of the management series that are available to you for free in the Juice Box Podcast. Becoming a member of that group, I really think it will help you. It will at least give you community. You'll be able to kind of lurk around, see what people are talking about, pick up some tips and tricks. Maybe you can ask a question or offer some help. Juice Box Podcast, Type 1 Diabetes on Facebook. If you're not already subscribed or following in your favorite audio app, please take the time now to do that. It really helps the show. And get those automatic downloads set up so you never miss an episode. Thank you so much for listening. I'll be back very soon with another episode of the Juice Box Podcast. The episode you just heard was professionally edited by Wrong Way Recording, wrongwayrecording.com.